Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Griefsters. I hope you're having an okay week, wherever you're listening from. Thank you so much for all your amazing comments about this series, season 8 we are now on, especially last week's episode with Christopher. If you haven't listened to that, I can't recommend it enough. He's such a wise and eloquent person, and the way he talks about grief and death was a really special conversation. So thank you if you messaged me about that. If you are enjoying the show, please do rate, review and subscribe. I know every podcast asks you to do that, but it really does make a difference. And if you've done it already and left a lovely review, thank you so much. I do read them and it's so appreciated that you've taken the time to do that. So thank you very much. This week is a special live episode. Now, obviously, we haven't had one of those for some time because we haven't had any live shows. But on the 9th of September this year at the amazing King's Place, there was the London Podcast Festival. And we did an actual live show with actual audience. They were all distanced and wearing masks at the time. And it was so amazing to, be back and be talking about grief in a public space. It was really lovely. I was joined by some incredible comedians. Dan Schreiber, who is, I'm sure you'll know, from No Such Thing as a Fish, one of the QI elves, very funny man. Brona C. Titley, an amazing comedian and actress and writer. She, just follow her on Twitter, she's hilarious. And also a brilliant new stand-up called Ola Labib as well, who's very, very funny, done lots of telly stuff as well. And I was just honoured that they came to talk to me. If you haven't listened to the live ones before, it's just me and three comedians talking about death in a very silly way. So we're not specifically remembering someone, we're just having an open and honest chat about death. And it's very silly and very funny. Thank you for listening. Please welcome to the stage the brilliant Ola Labib, Brona C. Titley, and Dan Schreiber, everybody. Woo! We've all got podcast mugs, guys. So thank you guys so much for coming. As I said, we're just going to have a relaxed chat about death. But I will have to start with some heavy questions. So Dan, how do you feel about death? Is it something that plays on your mind a lot, or are you more like, it's never going to happen to me type person?
Oh, I'd be weird if I was like, it's never going to happen to
me. Believe me, some people think that.
Really?
When I ask them, they're like, I don't think about it because I just don't think it will happen to me. And okay. I have to be like, oh, bad news.
Yeah, no, I think about it all the time. Okay. I think not on a daily basis. I don't sort of think, okay, this is the last day when I wake up. but I do, I'm pissed off with it.
Oh, yeah.
I hate it. I find it not fun, you know? Yeah. I think I'm one of those people that if we got the option of immortality, I would
take it.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And but I would make sure everyone else got it as well. And but I don't like the idea of non-existence, of no consciousness. I just find that, I find it really scary. I find it odd. But it's really weird, though, because when you think about it, we kind of practice for it every single night, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're scared to death, when you go to sleep, that's effectively training for like going, It's just a what longer version of
this. What is happening to Dan at night time?
Like, well, that's how I think about it.
Is like your wife over the like with a pillow over your face? Like, just
God,
in case
I'm really tired. I think I'll go do some death training.
That's what I think of sleep as, yeah, death training.
Ola, how do you feel about it? Are you someone who wants immortality like Dan?
I don't particularly want immortality, only because I know what's coming, or I believe I know what's coming after.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it's something that I constantly feel like everything I do in life is in preparation for death. And I worked on an oncology ward for like 2 years. So I was constantly surrounded by death. So it was something that I came to accept that, you know, people have this kind of concept that, you know, you're going to die when you're old. Mm. But that's not necessarily the case at all. So I became quite obsessed with death in 2017, and it made me read about it a lot, like spiritually, from different people's point of views, and to kind of get me mentally prepared for what's going to happen when it happens. So I do feel now I'm a lot more blessed than I was before, because I feel like I've got a comfort with death for when it comes, and that kind of gives me a positive peace of mind. And I feel like I can now enjoy my life without having to worry about death when it comes.
Yeah.
And it's like, if it comes tomorrow, it comes tomorrow. So I feel like I'm more mentally prepared for it.
That's amazing.
Wow.
This is, I mean, yeah, that was you worrying about sleep. I was like, dealt with it. That's what it sounds like to me. Dan could maybe come to the oncology ward and just like prep everyone with his sleep.
Come on.
But yeah, that's amazing. I think there's such a great place to get to, and so many people don't get there, of like at least thinking about it. So many people just go, I don't want to think about it, that's it. It's quite rare, and I think it often happens when you are, like you said, you work on a quality ward, you do a podcast about death, like these things that kind of force you to go, wow, actually, how do I feel about it? Brona, how do you feel?
Not interested. Not for me. Not for me. My death, I sort of feel like that's none of my business. You know, I won't necessarily be there. I like living, Carrie.
Will be there when it happens.
No, sure. And I'm not one of those people who thinks it won't happen. Right. But I don't think it'll happen to Dan. he's going to be fine. It's interesting because I've sort of had a turnaround on this recently.
Oh, yeah.
Because I pushed a human child out of my vagine.
Thank God it was a human. We weren't sure, but Brona came through and it was a human.
But it sort of changed my perspective a little bit because this is going to sound mad, but we're sort of in the place for it.
Yeah,
I kind of had this theory about myself before that was like, I would give up my life for somebody else. Like, you know, if I was in a hostage situation, first of all, I would make the, you know, terrorists love me with my personality. But secondly, I would let everybody else escape before me and I would die.
Oh, really?
It would be like, I would do that for people because I am so good. And that was my complete lie about myself to myself.
Oh, that's so good to know, because I would run out. So that's... Yeah.
Same. I'm glad someone's ready.
I'd be talking to the TV reporters going, no, she said it was fine.
Yeah. She said,
please,
it was
don't
fine.
Put this
she
into practice fine. Tonight. And then I gave birth to my daughter, and very much thought I was going to die during labor, just because of the insane pain, and also wished for it and was fine with it. And it was a bit like, oh, I hope my wife and the baby have a nice life, but I'm out of here anytime now. But then when my daughter arrived, I was like, oh no, I can never die. Yeah. Because whatever about my friends and my colleagues and my wife, like, I'm sure they like me fine, but I know that my baby likes me and very much needs me around. Yeah. And so now I sort of feel like in that hostage situation, I would kill every one of you because I need to go home to my child. And also
I've got to do bedtimes. Can I please just let me out? They don't go to sleep if I'm not there. It's very awkward. She's not as good as I am at the nursery rhyme. Come on.
She's definitely not as good as I am at the nursery rhymes. I mean, does she do 7 different Irish accents? No. But yeah, so I now kind of feel like, well, I need to die now while she's a baby and, you know, can forget me and have a normal life.
Yeah.
Or when she's in her 60s.
Yeah.
So those are the only two options. And nothing in between. So yeah, very much like went from not thinking about it, not caring about it, you know, just sort of, I knew people died, but it wasn't for me. I liked musicals. It just wasn't an interest. But then when I had a child, I was like, yeah, no, actually, I'm here for the immortality pill as soon as you've got it done.
Sweet.
done and how is that going? And we all want to know.
Well, I mean, I'm not actually working on it, but there are people who are working on extending life. Yeah, and yeah, I'm all for that, I think.
Are you? You think it's just longer the better?
I don't know. Just out of curiosity, raise of hands, like how many people like the idea of an extended life beyond what we're given?
Not many.
That's really interesting. I mean, like, and that's obviously circumstance of life, or you're happy with what you've had in time. But I just think
it's one of those ideas on paper. Right. Sounds great. You know, it's like that when you're like, yeah, we'll get IKEA to do the kitchen. You're like, yeah, that sounds great. Sounds great. And then you go through with it. You think, oh, we shouldn't have done this. This has looked too easy. Like, you think it's going to be great. But actually, how tired are you now? I am so tired. Like, I am so tired and I am not 40. Like, I know.
You need to lie down for an hour and do some death training.
Death training 101. Yes, we'll sort that out.
The sleep. I don't get the sleep. See, so yeah, I'm not practicing the death training. And I just think, I don't know, my grandma lived to 100. Uh-huh. Maybe this is why. And she had a real shit life. Like, it was shit. She really didn't know what was going on for about 15 years.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh, she's 100, congratulations. And I was like, she could be 7. She has no idea. But we were celebrating this 100th-ness. So maybe it comes with caveats, doesn't it? Like immortality, if you can stay healthy. And
caveats need to be a part of it.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
My great-grandmother passed away a couple of years ago, and she was 103, I think she made it to. Wow. She lived in Austria. And part of her reason for staying alive so long was she used to go on old people bus trips. Mm-hmm. And so they would just gather all the old people in Grobseekatz, which is a tiny town in Austria. They'd get on a bus and go on a trip. And at the end of each trip, she would be given a trophy for being the oldest person on the bus. And her house was just, I remember going and seeing just all these trophies. And she was like, yeah, last year's oldest person, this year's oldest person. And what really drove her was there was a lady who was only like 6 months younger than her. Who just never was able to claim the trophy. Yeah. And I kind of hope she's taken over I don't know if she died.
I love that your great-grandmother wasn't like, yeah, the secret to my long life is, you know, vegetables, drinking lots of water, exercise. It's like, vindication, trophies.
Fuck that lady.
Did the younger, 6 months younger woman actually die? And then your grandma was like, no competition.
Exactly. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I'm out of here. Like, it would be nice to think she finally got, the other one did get her place, but more likely the competition ended.
Yeah.
Right. She was like, done. Yeah.
So what sort of day trip gives out trophies to the oldest person that has survived? I mean, it's a great story, but I have questions.
Tiny town in Austria. They've got to do something. It wasn't every day. It wasn't like a new trophy every day. I think it was an annual trip of old people.
The annual trip of old people to see who survived.
Yes, exactly. 12 of them will leave. Only 8 will come back.
I mean, we would all watch that. Ola, have you thought about your funeral particularly? Is there like something that you have planned? You look like you've got, you're like,
so,
I've been waiting.
So where I come from, funerals is also an opportunity for like single people to meet.
Oh, like a wedding.
Yeah.
Wow, like a wedding. Cool.
So two of my friends actually met their spouses at a funeral. So wow. I would love to be the funeral version of Cilla Black. I would absolutely love it. Like I think I'd have an advert.
Yeah.
Feeling single and lonely? Not found your other half? Good news, Ola has died. But I would love that. I would love the concept that like people find love at my funeral.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I love
that concept. Yeah, it gives a real really new cool. meaning to the phrase Tinder.
Yeah.
That's great, because yeah, obviously traditionally English culture is very much like people meet up weddings and funerals are just like soggy sandwiches and uncles you don't want to talk to. Mm. But that's obviously not your experience. It's more of a vibe, more of like a party vibe.
No, there is. The thing is, you know, we have wedding outfits and we have funeral outfits. And the thing is, like, traditionally, you have to be seen to be mourning, but you might not necessarily be mourning. I'll have aunts who'll be going to a funeral and they'll be hee hee ha 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 ha. And they'll be like, okay, we're about to end. And you know, it's fake, you have to put it on. Like, I don't know if some people are familiar, in some African cultures, like in Sudan, we actually hire criers for funerals.
Oh, it's an Irish tradition as well.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. I think I'd be a college. Fantastic one. Oh my God, I reckon I get people really buzzed up on crying. I think that'd be good set. But we have like professional criers. Yeah. Like it's an emotion that can be switched on and off. We're ready to mourn on demand. We're ready to party on demand. And sometimes like people get like intermixed a little bit and accidentally like go woo at a funeral instead. But now I think my funeral is going to be proper vibes.
Yeah, that sounds vibes. That sounds good. I've heard of the professional mourners, and I have also thought I could do that. I feel like I could.
I think out of anyone I've ever met, you'd be really good at it, Carrie.
I think I would, and I think it'd be nice because if you do talk about grief or face with death a lot, it must be nice to have a place you just go and cry it all out.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
We don't have professional mourners, but we definitely have. You get this this idea of people who just go to all the funerals. You know, like just the old old lady who's just always there, even though she doesn't know who's being.
Oh yeah, they caught people out, didn't they, for that? Kind of like the opposite of wedding crashers.
What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
You didn't fucking know him. Out, Gladys.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they would go to the wakes, wouldn't they?
Yeah, there's people.
And they would steal the sandwiches
crashes.
And stuff. And
yeah, well, I think there are like, I think there's different levels. There's definitely like old ladies who go to them all out of a sense of respect.
And because they're part of the church,
they're
and
part
that's
of the
just
church,
like
yeah.
what's
I don't
happening
accuse
today.
The old ladies of like just being there for the sandwiches, but yeah, I'm sure some are just there for the sandwiches.
Oh, people are definitely so. Just like we have like a lot of food for weddings, it's the same for funerals because people come from different like villages and stuff. And I categorically guarantee my grandmother died 3 years ago and my dad obviously lives in England. So everybody's like, oh, fuck, the guy from England, his mum's died. You know, the food's going to be good. The amount of people that turned up for my grandmother's funeral was absolutely unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Wow.
But as much as I was upset, the food was fucking good.
I do love all the similarities between like the weddings and the funerals. I like how you were saying there's different outfits and it's sort of like, you know, the funeral ones are like the wedding ones, but sexier. You know, for all the flirting.
And also because, you know, black is a sexy colour, right? You know, a little black dress. You can wear that to the funeral.
Wear white.
Oh, you wear white?
Yeah, so the daughters, the sisters and the wife of the, if it's a obviously a guy they wear white, not black.
That's it. That is, there's other, because I've been reading about this lately, that it used to be white in lots of cultures and then went to black as well. And then I read somewhere, now I read it, Dan does a podcast about facts so it might not be true, that they started wearing black because they believed that it would make you invisible to the dead. So because you didn't want to be like haunted unexpectedly, you wore black.
You
want to
expect that shit.
You wore black so that they didn't come and like bother you. So they had to like go. And I was like, that is a madness that I'm on board with. But yeah, I think Romans also wore white. And in this country as well, some royalty used to wear white for mourning as well. So it's like the, blue for boys, pink for girls. Like, I think it's changed over the years. Brona, what are your funeral plans? Have you got them set? Have you thought about it?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't thought about it much, but I do know that instead of, like, being cremated or buried, I'd quite like to be exploded.
Oh. You serious? Some people are exploded. You can get exploded.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
You can get exploded up into the sky. There's so many things
No, that's different. I think that's, like, you're cremated and you're put in a rocket.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I didn't
know. Brona's talking about, dynamite. You know,
the full body.
Sorry,
yeah,
quite like cremated, then they explode your ashes up into the sky. Sorry, I didn't realise Brona wanted to be actually...
Yeah, limbs akimbo. I sort of like, you know, people standing around talking about what a great person I was, how funny my tweets were. and then they're sort of like, I'll always carry her inside me. And then, you know, I sort of hit them in the eye and they're like, and also inside me. But no, I just...
Could you do it like it's a dynamite stick? So as the funeral's going, they sort of light the rope at the end and we just watch it slowly head towards your...
That's so good.
Your body.
Do you remember that guy at one of the like lockdown protests and he put the flare up his arse?
Yeah.
Maybe he was practicing for being exploded.
Well, there was a guy, I was reading about a guy and I kind of feel like this is how I would love to go. Like if we're talking like making a statement when you die, there was a guy in Australia he's a New Zealand guy who was a truck driver and he fell on a high pressured air hose and it pierced his bum and he inflated like a balloon. Yeah. And he properly inflated. Unfortunately, they saved him. But the idea of being inflated like a balloon and not popping, but just like the balloon version of you, And if you put helium in place...
Is a nightmare, is the end of that sentence.
Like, it'd be amazing. My wife could walk me into my own funeral on a string.
And they'd be like, has he died or is he about to tour Willy Wonka's chocolate factory?
Yeah, exactly.
There's no way to tell.
I think
also,
it'd be
what
amazing.
About, like, you know, if you have helium balloons, they, like, sadly deflate and they just look really pathetic. Like, what happens eventually, Dan, when this saggy, like, ball of skin is left?
Or all the eulogies, they could undo me, take a tiny hit of the helium.
Dan Schreiber was a lovely boy.
That would be incredible.
I always loved him.
There's a lot of fun you could have with that.
I think what the trouble is you're imagining, like...
if it goes off and, like...
exactly. Yeah. And then you land in the fire and they cremate you.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Yeah. That would be good. But I think you're imagining like a fun skin expansion rather than like your skin ripping away from your own sinews and muscles. I think it would be messier than you're imagining.
Oh, yeah. I haven't really thought about it. But just it appeals.
I do think there's a business opportunity here. Somebody listening to this podcast is going to be like, I'm going to get some of that death dollar. you know, blowing people up with helium.
If you have a baby in hospital, they often come round and try and sell you things. So someone will come genuinely be like, do you want to have your baby photographed? This person come and do it. Oh, yeah. And I imagine like on the oncology ward, someone coming around with helium. Would you like to be inflated when you die? Have you thought about that? Talked about
would
it
that,
with your family?
Would that be allowed on the oncology ward, Ola?
But the thing is, it's like, whose job would it be to shove that pipe up your ass when you're dead?
Yeah.
Sign me up.
It's the opposite of cutting the umbilical cord as a dad.
Oh, it would be nice.
I had to do that for both my boys.
It would be nice cyclical if you could get the doctor that cut the umbilical cord.
Yes.
You know, and then they could be the one that puts the flare up your arse. It would be like the circle of life.
Oh, my God. Well, remember, this is recorded and this will be saved. So when you die very tragically and suddenly and you haven't written anything down, people will be like, just listen to the episode where Brona and Dan said they wanted to be inflated.
It's exploded. You're
sorry, so you said exploded.
And I was deadly serious.
Yeah, have you, like, seriously, apart from explosion, have you had any other thoughts about... What vibes do you want? Do you want party vibes? What do you want?
I don't think so. Like, I do think it's very important to process emotion. You know, I'm not one of those people that's like, I don't want people to be sad at my funeral. Oh, yeah. I mean, they better fucking be sad.
You
or what
tears.
Was I doing here for 140 years? Which is the age I've decided I'll go at.
Okay.
So, yeah, the vibe would be like, you know, process your emotions, but also, you know, have a bit of crack. Because, you know, it's getting people together. And I think, you know, culturally, Irish funerals are huge parties. And when you were talking about the funeral crashers, I was thinking it's such a different culture. Because, like, if my friend's boyfriend's grandmother died and I didn't go to that funeral, that'd be really rude.
Yeah, I have never... I remember, I think we were talking about this when you came on the Grief House and I spoke to Aisling B about this as well.
Yes, yeah.
Of, like... not going to funerals and Irish people thinking English people are so rude.
Yeah.
So she was it you was saying, yeah, like a friend of a friend's dad had died. So you're like, well, we're all going to the funeral. And all the English people being like, are we? Why? We didn't know them. Be like, because it's the funeral.
Yeah.
Whereas in England, it would be considered, you'd be a bit morbid if you were like, I'll come to that random relative's funeral.
I know. And it's quite like, because, you know, we're quite close geographically. I know facts as well, Dan. You know, we're like next door to each other. So it's weird that it does differ, but I suppose maybe the difference is like the Irish people are like, will there be alcohol? Cool, we're on our way. Has anyone died today? I'm thirsty. And, you know, it has come out of a kind of togetherness. And I'm from Dublin, I'm from the city, so I haven't really experienced the kind of country wake, which is those kind of 24-hour parties. I grew up in the urban the urban jungle of Dublin, a small city, but very much like going to, you know, extended families, their family funerals. It's a big occasion. And so, yeah, I haven't thought about my own so much. I'd quite like to give a speech.
You're going to pre-record.
I guess so. Unless I'm coming back. It would be hard to unexplode me to put me back together so I could give a speech. And I think I would quite like. I remember when I got married 4 years ago to my wife. Convenient. And after our ceremony, the person, the officiant who did the ceremony, she said to the guy who owned the venue, she was like, never in all my years have I been to a ceremony that was so, and I thought she was going to say, like, loving, beautiful, moving, and she was like, long. It was so long. Because you sort of get, you're allowed to have, like, two songs and two speeches and then a song at the end, and we just really, like, milked it and, yeah, and made everything long. So I think I would like my funeral to be long, yeah.
I think
like quantity time over quality.
Yeah, you don't want to. You want that sweet middle ground of a funeral, I think. Like, I've been to two short ones where you've just sat down suddenly and you're like, oh my God, they're already, the curtain's coming. Okay. And I've been to ones which are too long. But it depends on the. I think your long funeral would be a good funeral.
Thanks, Carrie.
That's so sweet. Like, Dan, what are your funeral plans? Have you thought about, like, burial, cremation, anything like that?
I can't decide on post-inflation whether or not I'll go cremation or burial. What I did think was, because I've been to a few funerals, and often part of the thing is you a few.
He knows how to party.
Yeah. Great sandwiches. The bit where you go out afterwards, and if there's a cemetery connected to it where they're buried, the graveyard where they're going to be buried, I always find that I get a bit distracted, even no matter how much I love, because it's a traumatic moment and you're putting someone down into the spot where they're going to be forever. You find yourself sussing out who the neighbors are, right?
Looking
at the gravestone next to it. I think that at my funeral, where I'm going to, if I'm buried, I'd like to invite the families of my neighbors to come and let them give a little speech going, so Dan's going to be living next to our great-grandmother, and she was amazing. She was a fighter pilot during World War II, and then the next people come up. And then I just started thinking more about this, going, it's a shame, because that's such an interesting community that we've not tapped into, the sort of the new afterlife, but for the present people living. So you could do things where, and it would be really good for the church, where it'd be like, all right, we're inviting all the relatives of the people who are buried here each week to come, and there's a new theme. Who is the biggest dickhead? And you know, and you'd have dead person of the month, and maybe like a
and
like
a trophy, right? They get a trophy. Yeah.
Gotta be a trophy.
I'm just saying, the whole community is waiting to be built around these places where you could meet people and talk about people. You'd go more to cemeteries as a result.
It's definitely a sitcom I want to watch.
Yeah.
But also, what I liked is that you're imagining the next door neighbor was like a cool fighter pilot instead of like, oh, this was John. He was an accountant. That was John.
Yeah. That'd be fine.
John used to always say things like that. That'll be fine. And then you just being like, oh, damn it. Is the spot over there free?
Can I move?
Yeah, because then, well, also, did you know this about churches, that there is like a hierarchy?
Really?
Yeah. Of where you get buried. Okay. So like vicars are buried nearer the church. Like they're allowed. And someone I knew recently, their mother passed away and it was... they just didn't have enough space. It was a really small country churchyard, and they gave her the privilege of being buried in the vicar's, where a vicar should be buried, because she'd like worked so much for the church. Yeah, and it was buried.
I think I'd like to be buried near a Pizza Express.
You still need the 2-for-1 vouchers posted through your car.
That would be it. It was like, you know, when ghosts have unfinished business, mine would be that I hadn't used a pizza voucher.
My cousin was showing me just the other day, it's in Ireland somewhere, it's the closest a church is to a pub. And it's the Guinness World Record. And it's literally, he stood outside it and he just panned the camera. You can walk out of the church and literally leap into the pub. It's so close. I love that idea.
Well, yeah, that brings me back to what Brayden was saying about funerals. And I was thinking as well, like, because, like you're saying, the culture is a fun funeral. And again, maybe in Sudan as well, like, it will be a party. So more people turn up. Whereas our vibe is not fun. Mm. So that's also what, when someone's like, do you want to go to a funeral? You're like, oh, not really. Like, because it is like, it will probably be depressing, and I've talked about this on the live show before. My biggest tip is speak to your friends who can sing and tell them now they need to come to the funeral, they need to go to the front, and they need to belt. Because there is nothing worse than being at a funeral, thank you, where people can't sing. And English funerals are full of people singing hymns they do not know the tune of. They're like, oh, do this, and you're like, no, just if you have a friend who can sing, now, speak to them now and say you need to be at the front leading it.
I can't sing in tune, but I can sing loudly.
Great. That's all you need is a confident, you know what I mean? The confident person to lead it. And often it is a performer, and I have tried to be that person at a funeral. All things right, like, come on guys, I'll do it. I'll lead you. You can just chill. Because the other thing I think English people do is if someone is being loud and singing loudly, they relax and then they sing better. Mm. It's about the quality, guys, of the song. It's very depressing. Is there music at a Sudanese funeral? No, music. No,
just flirting.
More than flirting.
Oh, really?
But no music. No.
That's really interesting.
No.
How do you get the party vibe going?
No,
it's just the food.
Just the banter and the food. Yeah. No, oh
How
my God.
How good are you at parties that you don't need music? That's amazing to be like, we just need food and banter.
We've got professional criers. Why do we need music? Yeah,
that's true.
And sometimes, like, if you're lucky, they cry to the theme tune of, like, Michael Jackson. It's perfect, so you don't need music.
There's a big bit of me that's really hoping you're lying about everything they say. Someone listening is going to go to a Sudanese funeral dressed in white. Got
Come
the Tinder
to mine.
App out.
That's really interesting. That's very interesting to me. Because again, I think music is, I guess, but when you go to a slightly like funeral, the one good thing is often the music will lift it, and either it is a hymn or a song, or they play music, and that at least that's how our vibe gets started. Because there's no banter vibe going on at the funerals, really. Mm. I mean, some. All right, I feel like there are some fun funerals, but you know, it's not what you'd expect when you go to a funeral.
I went to a funeral. So really, this is quite weird. I hadn't thought about this until basically starting this sentence. But
fresh off the press.
No, but I haven't been to too many funerals, fortunately, despite my brag earlier. Yeah. But one of them that I went to was a close friend who passed away very young, very sadly. He was living in Taiwan, passed away. And actually, the day I found out, I was recording something in this very room.
Oh,
so now that I think about it, I'm like, fuck, shit, the emotion of that comes back with the state of seeing this room again. But we went to Taiwan, and I grew up in Hong Kong. I was born and raised in Hong Kong, and there's lots of different traditions with funerals in Hong Kong. There was one cemetery where they would actually bury people vertically.
Oh, yeah, I've
because
heard
of
that.
The spacing Space. That you would have. But in Taiwan, the funeral, so he had his funeral out in Taiwan. It was phenomenal. It was flowers everywhere, and they build these huge effigies of what you're bringing into the afterlife with you. So you would see people passing with like these mansions that were built as that they would burn as part of a kind of cremation, or they would have like limousines or like iPods, but made of like, you know, it's a sort of offering to, it's kind of like the Egyptian, ancient Egyptian, you know, things to take into the future. And you'd have, in China, you had money that you would burn, it's money for the dead, which is really interesting. I used to collect it all because I didn't realize it was, I had so much dead afterlife money that I thought it was legal tender, and turned out it was, you can't use it in this realm.
Yeah.
But fascinating. Like, I do think we get it wrong in this culture. Definitely. Mm. In Australia, where I grew up as well, they're fine. Our funerals are fine.
Yeah, they're fine.
But they're not celebrations like you're talking about, Ola, with these amazing, feel good moments. I mean, you do need songs. I do think that's
necessary. You do need. I feel like in funerals. Okay, I think I'm very opposite to a lot of people. I actually like going to not because I enjoy it, but I feel like when you go to visit, well, this is how we see it. Someone who's passed, like, it shows that there was a lot of people that loved them, and then, you know, it's an opportunity to pray for them and this and that. So, because we mourn for 3 days, and after 3 days we shouldn't mourn, because they say after 3 days the soul of the person that passed, you know, can feel the pain of the people crying, and you know, there's all, I don't know how much of it's true, because, you know, like, religion and culture all gets intermingled and whatnot. But so the first day obviously is horrible, but you know, if I don't know, me personally, if I had someone, and when I've had people close to me die, I like being surrounded by lots of people. Yeah. I like there being a lot of chat and this and that. For me, that's something that I would want. So I try and go as much as I can.
Yeah, I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
I think, but you have to have a kind of peace with death, which I think is probably, like you said, that you have said you found, like, you have looked
I have my
it.
Ups and downs.
Yeah.
We all have ups and downs, like, you know, if I feel like I'm in a good place and I'm doing good things, but if I'm like, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. But if I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, then you're like, not now. Don't want to die. That's right now. This is not good.
Yeah, because I'm not in a good place. Yeah. But, you know, I think it very much oscillates where you're in a good place about death and you're in a bad place about death. But I think as long as I'm doing what I should be doing, I feel a lot better about it.
But I think what we're talking, it's really interesting what you were saying earlier, Dan, of like, it's almost a cultural thing, isn't it? And like, I don't think that our culture, like English culture particularly, like you said, I suppose you can have celebratory funeral. It really does depend. I suppose, maybe I've just been to some really depressing funerals. Because you can get, and I've definitely been to funerals of younger people, and this, obviously the sad thing is the younger the person is, the more people there are, and there is a sort of joy to that. And so when my dad died when he was 44, and it was packed. It was absolutely packed. Mm. Because he was a young guy with lots of connections, and obviously if you do live, 140, it might be quiet because it might not depend.
I don't think so, Carrie. I'm adorable.
I know, but if we haven't all taken the immortality pill, that's my worry. You might need to start making friends with like hot 19-year-olds to like bump up the funeral numbers, which it's a chore, but you've got to do it for the funeral.
I promise you right now that I will make friends with hot 19-year-olds. Just for you.
Just for the funeral.
But you are right. Like, you know, it's actually probably the most, more than working on an oncology ward, being on a ward where someone's, you know, there's people, I've seen people who've died like 108 and it's like, what is going on? But you, as much as you're like, oh my God, they've lived for so long, you're right. It's the worst thing having someone die old and alone. Yeah. And like the only person like holding their hand is the ward nurse or the ward occupational therapist or this or that. So I would rather die at 44 surrounded by lots of people that love me than die at 140 alone.
I do think, yeah, all right, don't be dissing my age. I do think though that death can have the importance that you attach to it, yeah, in terms of like, it's like one thing you do in your life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I understand the importance of it, and you know, I've had significant bereavements that have marked my life and, you know, changed who I am as a person. But I also think, like, you do it one time. You know, you brush your teeth, like, way more than you die. So you kind of, if you want to, fingers crossed. You know, if you want to, you can sort of choose not to think about it too much. I mean, my life philosophy kind of comes from a turtle that I saw on Kung Fu Panda, who said that, I think the quote was like, if you worry about something and it doesn't happen, then you've wasted that time worrying about it. And if you worry about something and it does happen, then you have to worry twice. And so I sort of, when an anxious thought comes in, like, oh, you know, I will die, my child will only have one mother. It's a little gay joke there for you. I sort of try and think, I don't actually have to think about that. I don't have to attach importance to it, yeah, I guess. Yeah. And so, it feels very important and painful, and like you might never get over it when it's somebody that you love. But then if you can sort of reframe that and think, well, actually, what was my relationship with that person? It was love. It was the love I felt for them and the love I felt they felt for me, hopefully. And that hasn't died. So, and not to be all cheesy and cliche about it, and like, you know, and so therefore they'll never die. Factually, they will die, but you can carry on that part of them as part of you. And I definitely feel like I carry all the people that I loved and have died with me. Mm. And they're here tonight.
Please, welcome to the stage.
Was that actually a quote from the turtle from Kung Fu Panda?
Yes, and I'm really glad that that's what you took from my from my profound and moving, the one time I've been serious on this podcast.
The TED talk that Brona just gave. Sorry, which character from Kung Fu Panda?
It's like a wizened old turtle.
It's a great quote.
Kung Fu Panda is a great film.
And I feel like you can find great friends in life if you don't mention it's the turtle that said that and just say the quote and they go, turtle. That's soulmates, isn't it?
Or you could start saying it was you. And people are like, God, do you know, Brona said this thing once. It was so profound.
And eventually she may want to be exploded, but wow, she dropped some gems of wisdom.
And then the writer of Kung Fu Panda sees it in a tweet. It's like, I said, I wrote that.
Anyway. I've been cancelled for plagiarising the Turtles.
Oh, I'm going to get cancelled again. I was cancelled like yesterday.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
What? Okay, so food is obviously a big thing in all of our funerals. What food? What food are we serving? Oh, I feel like I have to come to you first.
Oh, like, mate, everything.
And are we talking like how much everything?
The thing is, it's so contradictory. It's really. Oh, I'm going to make us sound like such messed up people. But people when they mourn. Like, if they really mourn, we don't have... So we won't drink juice. We'll only drink water.
Right, yep.
We won't eat food that is well-seasoned. Yeah, we won't... My grandma, Allah rahmah, when my aunt, my dad's sister, passed away, and ever since then, she never, ever drank anything other than water. She'd drink tea, but she would drink it without sugar because she was constantly mourning. So we do certain things like we do like henna on the tip of our fingers and the sole of our feet to mark celebration. She never put henna on her body again since. But my grandmother was quite bizarre because she was prepared for her death about 8-9 years before she died. And we'd go back home every year, and every year she'd tell my dad, "Don't leave, I'm gonna die this year." And every year we'd go back and be like, "Oh, she's not dead yet."
You've got to come through with that if you're gonna.
Yeah, it's like, what's going on? It's like, stop it! You've been saying that for the past 7 years. But she was so well prepared for her death, and she used to have this wooden box that she kept near her bed, and it was like a slide box, and she'd have the, because we wrap ourselves in linen when we die, and she's already had the linen she wanted to be wrapped in.
Oh, that's nice.
And I remember I bought Calvin Klein Euphoria and she smelled it on me. She was like, "Oh, that smells amazing." And I was like, "Oh, do you want me to get it for you? I'll get it next time I come." She'd be like, no, give it to me because I'm going to be dead the next time you come.
Oh, she had a racket going.
Yeah, she was on it. So I gave her the Calvin Klein, and I thought she'd, you know, put it in her shelf or whatever, and she put it in this box. I'm like, "What are you doing?" And she was like, "That I want to be sprayed on it when I died." I'm like, "Nah, fuck that. I don't want that on me. I don't want to go next to my grandma on her deathbed, smell and be like, shit, she smells like my first Saturday night in Soho."
I like her taste though. Yeah, you know what?
Calvin Klein
Euphoria. That's how it tastes.
But I just think it's amazing how prepared she was for it and how accepting she was for it. She knew what she wanted to be wrapped in. She knew what she wanted to smell like. She knew where she wanted to be buried. She knew all of these things. And that's why I find it really interesting that, you know, you have certain plots. Like, this is going to sound so messed up, but I've bought a plot of land back home because I want all my family, when we die, to be buried together. That makes any difference at all, but just I think psychologically knowing that our bodies are is that really messed up?
Totally agree.
That's
totally
really
agree.
Normal, yeah.
Have you thought about your neighbours? Because Dan is looking...
Well,
Dan is looking for a spot.
Well, I definitely want my sister behind me because I can imagine even after I'm fucking dead, she's going to be nagging me. Preferably my dad on my right-hand side and then mum on the left.
Yeah, I think that's nice. Again, like if you can... And the thing that we always talk about in the show, it's like if you can have these conversations now, so much better than having them on an oncology ward or when someone's already died and everyone being like, oh, what did they want? We don't really know.
Yeah.
So if someone goes and like, oh, there's a plot of land, or like you said with your grandma, when stuff is ready, it's so much easier for the grieving to deal with it. Like, it's just so much easier.
It's so much easier having someone who's dying be not happy, but like accepting of their death. Like my uncle, who was like a second dad to me, he passed away 3 years ago and we were absolutely distraught. He was terminal and it took me 2 years to deal with his death. Mm. Like even now talking about it, I don't feel I'll ever kind of deal, even though he was a very spiritual man and he was so content. And when he was made terminal, he, you know, we were like, I can't even, anyways. And I remember he was on the ward, D6, and he was just sat there looking at us like crying when the doctor said that. And he was like, why are you lot crying? He was like, I should be the one that's crying. He's like, well, what have you got to be upset about? And it was almost like he was mocking us.
Yeah, yeah.
He was mocking us for being upset. And yeah, he decided to fly back. He flew back. He was like, I want to die in Sudan.
So is that plot that you, the bit of land that you bought, is it in Sudan or in Portsmouth?
I'm alive and I don't want to be in Portsmouth. Let alone be dead and be in Portsmouth now. Can you imagine?
Also, you know, it's probably hard to get plots of land to bury people in Portsmouth. I don't know.
And this podcast is not brought to you by the Portsmouth Tourist Board.
Well, they've closed down Debenhams and there's no one's bought it. So maybe I'll buy like the Miss Selfridge section of Debenhams.
The perfume section, where the perfumes used to be.
But I had an interesting one taking somebody home for their ashes to be spread.
Oh, yeah.
Because my wife, her father was from Sri Lanka. So she's half Sri Lankan. And I won't sort of tell the full story because it's sort of not mine to tell. It's my wife's and her family. But I will tell you the funny part, which was that we were spreading his ashes in Kandy by a river. And like a lot of things went wrong. And I did fully think that I was going to... We were on the bank and there had been like monsoons. I thought I was going to fall into the river. And we could see this beautiful bridge out in the distance. And when I came back to London, I was telling a colleague about it. She was like, oh yeah, I was on that bridge 2 years ago. I saw that bank where you spread the ashes. There was two crocodiles on it. And I was like, oh my God, that would have been so a Brona way to die. Like be spreading someone else's ashes and then be eaten by a crocodile.
Actual crocodiles?
Yeah, yeah, actual crocodiles.
Fuck.
And they would have loved my Irish ass.
Oh, this is different. What's this? I don't know what it is. It's sweeter. Yeah.
It tastes like potato waffles.
I feel good. Oh my God. Fucking crocodiles.
So I sidestepped that one. So maybe I will live to 140.
My family has a plot.
You've got a plot?
In Austria. My great-grandmother, when she passed away, she went
with
into
her trophies.
It.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. All the trophies went in with her. No, she... we have, and it's really beautiful. It's just this big headstone that just says the word Schreiber. That's it.
Nice.
Just has our surname.
Oh, so you're
on
all
it.
There. Everyone's under Schreiber.
Yeah. So it just.
Oh, sorry, not that one. no, they are Schreiber, but yeah, behind.
And it's got three people in at the moment, okay. And my grandfather, I believe, he wants to be buried there, and there's, you know, we're all talking about, is this our one place?
So how do you feel about that as someone who doesn't live in Austria now?
Yeah, I don't know. If my
nice to get away, isn't it?
Especially after this past year.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what as I was saying before, I don't know if I want to be cremated or like my dad always talks about wanting to be cremated. And there is a spot where they live in Australia. That's where I grew up for my teenage years. They live in Avalon and there's this beautiful beach, Palm Beach. And there's this big walk that's up to a lighthouse and he wants to be scattered off the lighthouse. And I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know if that's a...
Your dad's choice? I don't know if you have much say.
I feel like it's more our choice. That's one thing I think.
Interesting.
I think we should have a bit of choice in...
Ooh,
because I want to...
Controversial.
I know it is controversial, but I want to be able to get access to my dad because I am quite materialistic.
Yeah. I fully agree with you.
Yeah,
I think all of this stuff is for the living. I do think that the last person to have any say is the dead person.
I'll tell you one cool thing though, where we live, where this lighthouse is, it's very windy. There's a lot of wind that goes on there. And it's on it's two beaches that are either side of a sort of peninsula that lifts up to this lighthouse. And on the left hand, sorry, on the right hand side of it, if you were walking up to it, is where they film Home and Away. And I do.
Now
quite,
we know what you're talking about.
I
oh
do
my God.
Quite like the idea because you see them filming there every morning. That we would do it in the morning, and that a wind would pick my dad's ashes, and he could cameo in his final moment.
Each that actor is being like. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Let's just take that shot again.
That is way better than a Debenhams in Portsmouth.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? I'm sort of torn because I do think the dead's wishes should be fulfilled.
Nope.
Yeah, unlike Bona. But we didn't with my dad. My dad requested to be placed somewhere. And when we were talking about it, my mum was like, oh, I don't think he meant it. And we were like, really? She's like, oh, because I was hassling him. So he just said, oh, scatter me there. And yeah, we ended up scattering him in Wales, where he was from. But it is a bit... I don't go there that often. Yeah. Like, I haven't been there since we scattered. So yeah, the idea, I think. And then sometimes I know with my granny and granddad, like the ashes got split between the children. So everyone got to like have a moment and do their own ceremony. But then I'm like, how do they? Are my granny and granddad like, thanks guys. Actually, we were together and now we're fucking like in three different points over the country.
Yeah.
I did read about this cool thing recently. Maybe you've talked about it on the podcast before, which is called Eternal Reef. Where take your ashes and put it with a sort of a sea-friendly cement, I guess, and then they make a reef, and the point of the reef is to sustain and encourage sea life. Right. So it's sort of a part, you know, you part of your ashes, part of a living reef, and then reef and wreath are both relevant to this bit, but it's definitely a reef. And yeah, and it goes into the ocean, and so obviously that's, you know, the family can go out with it and have a ceremony when they're placing it. But yeah, I mean, I thought that was cool. Definitely, like, yeah, you'd be sleeping with the fishes in a real way.
Yeah, well, there's quite a few of those, so, you know, turned into diamonds and so on. There's a company that does
beautiful.
It yeah, they've got a tagline which is diamonds and grandma are forever.
Oh.
And that's been going for years, but there's this really interesting one, which is...
They nailed that.
They really did.
Yeah, I hope they took the rest of the day off.
But there's one in Liverpool, in Toxteth, which is, I believe, in Liverpool or just next to Liverpool. Yeah, so there's this thing. So do you guys remember the band, this is a question for everyone, the KLF?
KLF,
Justified in their Ancient, and they're a big band that destroyed themselves, and they burnt £1 million in in an island off the UK. And they've done a thing very recently where they're building a pyramid of the dead in Toxteth.
Oh, wow.
It's very big. And the idea is that you buy a brick and you get given this brick. And when the person who's bought the brick or who they've bought it for has died, they get cremated. And the ashes, just like 1 milligram or something of the ashes, gets put into this brick. And they fire the brick. And then you get added to a pyramid that is slowly building this giant pyramid. And they do it every year. They add the bricks at a big celebration.
That's lovely, but I would also sort of like it to be building... I'd like it to be building something useful.
I haven't, no.
I lived in Liverpool. I sound like such a herb, like lived everywhere. But I lived in Liverpool. I worked in Aintree Hospital. Toxteth is one of the roughest areas. I wouldn't leave a turd
so there,
let alone a brick with someone that I love's ashes in it. I'm going to have to get that's a piss take.
No, it's real. It's genuinely real.
In Toxteth.
Yeah, and there's the Toxteth Day of the Dead, and they parade through the streets, and you can watch it online. It's pretty amazing.
It's a good because Dan described it. And we were all so there. We were like, wow, that's beautiful. And then Ola was just like, guys, it's not what you're imagining. But
I do think it would be better if it was building something useful, like social housing. You know, like a needle exchange center. Like, you know, just an arch. That's not going to feed the kids.
No, but it's also quite... it's, you know, kind of what they used to do, isn't it? That's what happens in the church crypt. Like, everyone is basically down there in a box and that's sort of forming part of the structure of it. So it's kind of... But, yeah, I guess... How long is it going to take them to build that pyramid? That's like, if it's like half built for ages and you're constantly saying, oh, it will be a pyramid. Mm-hmm. At the moment, it's a building site that's not finished.
Yeah, I mean, it's tiny, but it's a big artistic piece, basically. So the question is, do you want to be part of a big artistic movement? I mean,
Not in Toxteth. Anywhere, but not there.
That's so interesting because I only know two things. But I think Ringo Starr's grandmother was from Toxteth and she was known as the Voodoo Queen of Liverpool. She used to, so he used to be left-handed when he was younger. He went back to being left-handed when he was older, but
wait, did he have a right-handed period in the middle?
Yeah, when his grandmother gave him exorcisms in order to cure
him
and get the devil out of him. So he went right-handed. So that's why Ringo Starr
if Ringo Starr, there's that fake quote that John Lennon supposedly said that he wasn't even the best drummer in the Beatles. Totally fake. Ringo Starr, amongst drummers, is one of the greatest drummers who ever lived. Yeah. And the reason is he used to be a right-handed drummer, but then he went back to left hand. But by then he had a right-handed drum kit, and it gave him a random style. So expelling the devil from him turned him into one of the most interesting drummers. And she was from Toxteth.
See, I feel like that's an argument in favor of exorcisms, I'd be against them personally.
No, it sounds like it's always worth exercising. It does sound like it will. There's always a benefit. So if we have this idea of we're 140 and everyone else is around us and it's lovely, have you thought about last words? Any wonderful thing you want to say to give? I mean, you've already given your... Surely you're going to quote Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that was a good one. I just feel like 90% of what I've said while I've been alive has been a joke or sarcasm. I feel like if I went out on something really earnest, like loving you was the best thing about my life, like, boring, vomit.
She's possessed.
I definitely would want to go out on like a sick burn. Like, I don't know, like, come to your improv show. I'd rather die and then just... die, you know, or
that would
or
be
freak.
Such a sick burn. Yeah, if I was there, sick I'd be like, burn. Oh, she got me.
But
good.
You are going first because I have to sing loudly and out of tune
yes,
at your funeral.
That's true.
Somebody out and be like, you know, oh, I need to tell you about something. Well, someone I buried under the, and then just die.
Yeah, that's the, you leave a bit of mystery.
Leave a bit of mystery behind. Yeah. Something to talk about at the funeral.
Olav, you had any thoughts about your last words?
I don't think I'll ever say anything. I think when I've got to the stage where I'm dying, I want people to, you know, it's when someone's like on their deathbed and they're like, oh my God, have they gone? Nah, they've got a pulse. Oh, they're gone. Oh no, they're still gone. I want to keep people guessing for at least a few days. I don't want to say anything.
That's smart. And it does happen. If you have watched anyone die, often there is lots of, they've gone. They haven't gone. Yeah. And you are constantly like slightly on edge. So if you could keep that for a good three days.
Wow. I think 3 days. Ooh. I think that'd be fun.
They're going to be very relieved.
That is
end.
Such a strength.
But that's the thing. Yeah. They'll be built up and they'll be so devastated. But when it gets to the third day, they'll be like, oh, she dead you.
Yeah, and they'll
so
be like,
I think
oh,
I'll give them
finally.
A sense of relief.
I was in, just remember what you said, Brent, I was in a school play years ago. And
sorry, I can't come. I have plans.
And I played this old lady character, and genuinely, her lonely line was, "The gold is in the." It was a version of Oliver Twist, but not the musical. Can you imagine every single ticket holder that turned up was like, "I think there's no orchestra. It's not the musical." Fuck. A school kids play of Oliver Twist, not the musical.
Oh, Oliver Twist, the dramatic version.
Yeah. Oh no. Dan, have you had any thoughts about your last words?
I haven't. No, I've never actually thought about that. I'm fascinated by last words generally. I think, and there's a particular type of last words where. There's last words where it's kind of like to the room, you know, to the people. And then there's the interesting last words where it's apparent that like some kind of vision has. So one I read about just yesterday was just speaking of the Beatles, when John Lennon's aunt, who raised him basically in place of his mother, Aunt Mimi, died. Her last words were, "Hello, John." And it was her staring into the distance, and you kind of think, okay, what did she see there? And the one that really fascinates me is Sam Kinison. He was a comedian, rock and roll comedian in America, and he kind of predates, if you know Bill Hicks, Bill Hicks basically had the act of Sam Kinison. He was this, he came on with a bandana and he played metal music, and it was just, but he was also a preacher, and so he had this extraordinary delivery. And he was driving with his brother and a few friends in a car, and the car got hit by another car. And they were all fine, except for him. And it would later turn out that he had internal injuries that no one could quite spot in the moment. And he was laying on the side of the road. And all of them say that his last words were him having a conversation with something, going, but why? Why do I need to go? Why? I'm paraphrasing slightly, like that's close enough to it. He's going, why? And that was him in a bit of stress. And then he calmed down and he goes, okay. And then he dies.
And you know what, Dan? It's really interesting you say that because when my uncle passed, we found it quite bizarre because my aunt, his wife, was obviously in hysterics. And she said before he died, he was like, he said to her, look, move aside. These gentlemen want to come in. And she'll be like, there's no one there. And he was like, look, I'm not delirious. He said, let them in, let them in. They look like kind men. And he was looking at, you know, she couldn't see. And, you know, he passed away. So there was somebody there that he was talking to. And, you know, it depends how spiritual you are or whatever. But they say a lot of the times in your last minutes, you're thirsty. You feel like you want to drink and you talk to someone that's not there. So my thing always is like you assume that someone at the end of their life is delirious. What if they're not delirious? What if they see someone that you don't see? There's infinite amount of frequencies in this universe. We see one frequency. You don't see sound. You hear it. So, you know, maybe there is someone there that, you know, when you're coming close to death and all these crazy chemicals that you only get when you're dying allows you to see something that somebody else doesn't see. So that's why when, you know, these, you know, you see people who are about to die and they're like, oh, give them a bit of midazolam, they're delirious. Or give them a bit of morphine, they're delirious. I'm like, I don't agree that you should like calm them down and shush them down. Maybe they're legitimately conversing with someone that we just can't see. So it's just
so I love that. And like, and it's lovely to, as the living, to like latch on to something like that, because we none of us want to think that our brain is going to fully stop. And, you know, I suppose we don't necessarily want to think that we are only this vessel that we go about living in. So any stories of people, you know, seeing somebody or, you know, young children recalling past lives, I latch onto them, like hope that we'll all sort of get to go around again. But it's also good that we've discovered tonight what happens after life and when you die, which is that John Lennon comes to fetch us all.
Hello, John.
I should just clarify with that Sam Kinison story. Those were his last words. I don't know if he just immediately died afterwards, but he did. He died in the those were the last moments, and they said he was sort of at peace.
Well, they talk. I've interviewed palliative care nurses and doctors and things, and they often say very matter of factly that, you know, there's the illness, the prolonged death, and the pain. There'll be pain, and then there is the weird moment of clarity when often. Family members turn to the doctor and say, they're doing better, they're rallying, and they're like, it's the bit just before they die when everything is clear.
I don't want to like prolong, but there was a woman who was on end of life, and I'm telling you, end of life, they stopped food and drink, they stopped IVs, they stopped everything. This woman was on her deathbed, and I remember one of the nurses coming out to the doctor station. I was sat there and she was like, oh, I think this lady's about to die, you know, call the family, blah blah blah, you know, her temperature's this, her blood pressure's not, is okay, but it's end of day. And I was like, are you talking about that woman? And we turned around and it was one of the I was like, fuck, she's a ghost. She literally walked out and she was like, oh, when are the trolleys coming round, like for teas and coffee? And I was just like, oh my God. Like, this is what Bruce Willis felt like in Sixth Sense. And it was so bizarre. And so they called the family and they were like, oh, we thought, but you know, it's better. But you know, come in, you know, she's perked up. They put her back on food and drinks. They took her off palliative and she died 2 hours later.
Wow. Oh my God.
I mean, she just wanted that cup of tea. Scared the shit out of me.
That is clarity when you know that all you want out of life is a cup of tea.
Yeah, like, just before I go, one last cup. Yeah. I don't have last words, but I want one fucking last cup of tea.
They say I'm going to be thirsty and I want to get ahead of that.
Well, that, you know how you were saying before about wearing the black because the dead see you're invisible to them. Interestingly, food and drink at the end of a life, that used to be. So you know the old idea of death row in America, the last meal, you get to pick. It's your thing. The reason that came about, from what I've read, is that there used to be a superstition that the dead would come back if they didn't have a substantial final meal.
Oh, wow.
So the idea was you pick what you want to eat and you're going to go into the next world feeling like, oh, that was a kick-ass chicken.
It was the American justice system future-proofing themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. That's not weird.
We kill them, we want them dead.
That's such a like modern thing, you know, death row.
Yeah.
But it's such an ancient Egyptian way of thinking of like fill their bellies before they go off into the the afterlife.
Well, no, but I mean, it didn't just start like sort of in the modern time. This was a thing from the past that's kind of
But the fact that they like that it's now carried on to such a like modern time, and we would just go, oh, yeah, of course you want something nice before you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you would think in prison cuts that would be the first thing to go.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We might, like, sometimes we ask if anyone has any questions and no one does. And I want you to know that's fine. That's fine. It's COVID times. You might not want to put your hand up. You might not want to speak. But we have just 5 minutes left. So does anyone have a question that they or a thing they want to share? Yeah.
Speaking of last meals, what would your last meals be?
Pizza Express on a voucher.
On a voucher.
Do you know what? You could Pizza Express because it wouldn't disappoint. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? If you went for something fancy and you didn't like it or it was a bit much... But Pizza Express, you'd be like, I do know, I love the Quattro Formaggi, so I will be okay. That's the only one I can think of. Please don't order me a Quattro Formaggi when I'm dying. Loren. Ola, what would your last meal be?
I don't think I'd eat anything because I'd be really worried that if I ate something like and I died, it'd rot in my stomach and it would like I'll produce.
She's
gas
thinking
or
practical
something.
Here.
Wow. Yeah. I absolutely love your restraint. You're like, I won't say any last words. I won't have a last meal. Like, my last words would be going on for days. I would ask for that last meal 6 times.
Yeah, exactly.
Brian, is it just one more? Yeah, one more slice and then I'll just finish the speech.
Doubles? Did anyone say doubles?
Two for one, they're both for me. Dan, what would your last meal be?
I would struggle to pick between three. So one would be schnitzel. Schnitzel because my award-winning great-grandmother also, I was told this as a child, won best schnitzel in Austria.
She had a lot of trophies.
And
lady.
I used to tell everyone at school that my great-grandmother has won the best schnitzel award in Austria. And schnitzel was part of our family. It is every Christmas as an Austrian family. So we have that a lot. So schnitzel or fried rice. Grew up in Hong Kong. Fried rice, my favorite thing. Or a sausage and egg McMuffin from McDonald's. And I think that would probably win.
Low brown.
With the hash brown and the orange juice. Yeah. Yes.
That is.
Sorry.
You're going off to the afterlife feeling very queasy. You're going, it looked good, but I shouldn't have done
that.
That's not what McMuffins do.
If I'd eaten a double of sausage and egg McMuffin, absolutely. Single sausage and egg. Perfect.
Great question.
Yeah, great question. Anyone else want to know any more about... this one just back here. We'll make this last one.
Hey, guys. Do you guys believe in ghosts?
In ghosts. Do we believe in ghosts? Dan, do you want to go first? I feel like...
I think ghosts... So I've been looking into this recently for, like, as I was saying before, I'm doing a thing which is kind of in this territory. I think it's the most interesting thing because so many people I know who sit on the side of non-religious believe in ghosts, and I've always equated as that being a connection. And I did a survey online where I asked atheists specifically, do you believe in ghosts? So many interesting, you know, people saying yes, but I think it's not a spirit. I think it's the remaining residue of energy that is...
You mean a spirit.
All these weird justifications for what it could possibly be. And I don't know what I think about it, genuinely. I think I probably am on the side of I don't believe in ghosts. But there's a whole history of humanity believing and seeing. So there's got to be something going on. That's all I think. I'm not sure what it is. And I think it's worth slightly believing them to suss it out, to find out why we all think this. It's kind of like with people who say they see Bigfoot and the Yeti and stuff like that. A lot of explorers have discovered amazing things by looking for that and finding something else, finding the reason behind it. And if we brush things off like ghosts and say that they're not real, that's boring because there's too many people saying they might be around. There's just too many people reporting that. I'm agnostic to that in a weird way. But
I just think how much I would like to see you on like a BBC drama investigating ghosts. I'd watch that. I'd really watch that.
Well, okay, I'll tell the coolest thing though, the thing I love about it is it can draw amazing events. And one of my favorite stories is the Royal Albert Hall. There was 10,000 people who packed in to see the spirit, so literally to see an apparition, 6 days, of Arthur Conan Doyle, 6 days after he died. So he died and his family held a memorial service and he was the top billing. He's going to appear right at the end of the show and 10,000 people crammed there to see him and a lot of people claim that they saw him. What a gig. Even if he wasn't there, what a gig. You saw Arthur Conan Doyle headline the Royal Albert Hall? a week after he died.
I love that even in his death, he was like, no, keep booking gigs. I'll do them.
Yeah, yeah.
I can make it. I'll double up. Yeah. I can make it.
And he's here tonight.
Ola, what do you think? What's your opinion on ghosts?
Well, I don't, not as what ghosts are, but I do believe in spiritual entities. We call them jinn. But yeah, I 100%. Believe they exist again.
What is jinn? Is it
jinn is like, it's like a spiritual entity. So we believe that they live amongst us. So what people say are ghosts or spirit things or whatever, they live amongst us. But again, I talk about frequencies and stuff like that. So just because we can't see them doesn't mean they're not there, but they have ways of communicating. So for example, you know, people who tell the future, or you know, you can go to these, like we call them witch doctors, if you've lost something or you want to know information, they are able to conjure something and they can give you this information. Example, one of my, and it's really, really bad, like you definitely, we believe you should definitely like not do it, but for example, one of my cousins lost a watch, a Michael Kors watch, not that it matters, but she she wanted to know where it was, and she went to one of these witch doctors, and they do some really bizarre, it's like dark stuff, and she was able to tell her where it was. Somebody took it, and she was able to tell her. Now, a
Your
lot of people will be
took
like,
it, with
her. Yeah, it was me. But like, a lot of people won't believe that. And like, oh, 2 weekends ago, my dad was like talking about this stuff, and my brother's like, oh, this is bullshit, this is bullshit. And my dad was like, this is things like I've experienced and seen myself. So I don't talk about it too much, and cut a very long story short, I do believe they exist. It's something that we can't see with our naked eye. It's something that is something I've never look too into, because I do believe that it's dangerous ground. So I know it's there, but I just stay away from it.
Yeah, fair. And is jinns, are they people who've passed away who are here, or are they just completely separate entities?
Different creations,
right?
Altogether,
right? I read recently, this is, I always wonder where ghosts go when they're haunting. So I discovered that, I read this in a Derek Acora book.
Facts only from Dan.
The buffet at Yeovil Junction train station was haunted. And so people would report like being there, and they'd suddenly see like the salad or casserole just lift up. And it turned out it was like, I can't remember her name, but it was a lady who'd passed away, and she was haunting the buffet specifically. and the cafe shut down recently. And I wrote to them to say, you know, are you worried about where the ghost is going to go? Like, where does she go? Yeah. What does she do?
When stuff closes down.
Yeah, she's lost, like she was levitating sausages. What is she doing now? Where is she going?
And
the person said, "I'm sorry, we're National Rail. We don't really respond to this." Very well. But then at the bottom,
because of data protection, we can't tell you about the ghost location.
GDPR.
But then at the bottom did say, "But actually, there is someone on staff who knows a lot about this, and I'll put you in contact." So I'm going to speak to them. I'm going to talk to them about it, because there's so many fun hauntings around the UK. Just people. Highgate Pond, if anyone lives in London North, that's haunted by a frozen chicken, and people have reported
seeing
it.
So is my freezer.
Yeah,
I'm vegetarian, but the joke worked.
What anyone do you mean lives there? By a frozen chicken.
Yeah, it's a frozen chicken.
Well, you mean people see a frozen chicken, then they're like, "Oh, it's gone." What?
Yeah, yeah.
That's literally like they see a frozen chicken in the pond. But was the chicken was already dead when it must have gone into the pond? So why is the ghost of the frozen chicken hanging around the pond?
It
wasn't killed there.
No,
you know
the
I mean?
Story is so long. Francis Bacon is...
God, anything that starts with Francis Bacon, you're like, you know I'm going to be here for a while.
So not the artist, but Francis Bacon, the sort of philosopher and ideas person from a long, long time ago. He was on his way home one night, and he had this sudden idea, and he'd just gone to the market. He had all his food in the back of his carriage, and he was getting home, and he suddenly thought, you know, what would happen if we could do refrigeration? Oh. Could we keep meat and keep it to last longer? And so he jumped out of the carriage and he took the food that he had and he buried it in the snow and he was going to come back and see if it held. And then he got in the carriage, but it was so cold and he'd been in with like not the appropriate clothing that he got pneumonia and he died. And he now haunts a house and a pub.
I thought
apparently.
You were going to say he's the frozen chicken. And he's the spirit of the chicken.
No, but, and that kind of led to the idea of refrigeration as like a basic idea. Yeah.
the chicken that he buried in the snow that day is the chicken that haunts Highgate Pond. So it's kind of like a celebrity chicken. It's part of progress for refrigeration.
That is so incredible. I can't quite take that in. That the spirit of the... basically, you're being haunted by the spirit of the discovery of refrigeration.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
That's pretty good. Brona, do you believe in ghosts?
I mean, it's hard to top the discovery yeah. of the spirit of refrigeration. But I mean, I think I'm quite similar to you. I knew I was Sudanese. In terms of, you know, it's not... I mean, I lived in a really old building in university that was built in like 1770s in Dublin that Oscar Wilde had lived in. Just,
oh, really?
Just two people with the same kind of brain. and there was three ghosts in the room that I lived in, and two of them were hot. I did feel like I saw like shadows that looked like people. And, you know, when my daughter is 19 months now, but when she is a baby, like when she was smaller, like 6-7 months, I used to, when I would put her to bed, she would just stare into dark corners in the evening and go... And I'm waving for the podcast listeners. And I think... The people who I've loved who have died, I feel like they've come back to see me in dreams. And I've always woken up feeling like, oh, that was a lovely visit, as opposed to that was a dream. But I also think my fundamental belief is that my tiny pea-sized human brain can't actually fully comprehend what that would be like. And so I think my belief about ghosts is closer to that they're the ghost of something as opposed to like, you know, they're the ghost of an emotion or, you know, as opposed to like a person in a sheet walking around. Although if there is a chance to do that, I will come back and do that.
Oh, God. I'm ready. 140-year-old Brona on the sheet on the head.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Yeah, it's difficult. I sort of do because I like drama. So like when I was a kid, I was always like, oh, there's a ghost. You know, I like the idea of it. I watched, you know, I read too much Victorian novels and watched Sundial or whatever it's called too much. Very niche reference there. And then as I got older, I was like, oh, maybe it's just bullshit because my dad died and he didn't do any haunting. So I was like, well, come on, you know, seems a bit bullshit to me. So yeah, I was a bit sort of like skeptical. And then I started the show and talking to people about death, and more stories came up that I was like, oh. And one of my favourites is Susie Ruffle, who was very, very close to her grandma, her nan, and I think another great aunt. They're very, very close. And Susie was dreamt of them one night, and they were in a crowd, and she couldn't find them, and she was just kept trying to get to them. And then she sort of was aware that she was in her room, and they were standing over her bed, and she was half awake thinking, oh, they're here. And she heard them say, oh, God, she's seen us. And then she woke up, and that still gives me goosebumps. I know. Oh, that's when Susie told me that, I was like, fuck, because that had too many things, like too many things yeah. about it. It wasn't just like, oh, I saw a white sheet, or like, yeah. oh, you know, I was cold in Hampton Court Palace. It was chilly. Thank you so much. You've been such a wonderful audience. Please give a huge round of applause to your amazing guests, Olila B, Brona C. Titley, and Dan Schreiber, everybody.
You can follow Dan Schreiber on Twitter at Schreiberland, that's S-C-H-R-E-I-B-E-R, land. Brona is at Brona C. Titley, so that's B-R-O-N-A-C-T-I-T-L-E-Y. Ola is on Instagram at the Ola Labib, that's the O-L-A-L-A-B-I-B. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was recorded live at the King's Place in King's Cross, a wonderful venue, and it was edited by Kate Holland. The music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. I am recording this from my living room. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.